how do you approach a client when they come to you with fatigue? How do you determine that it's actually adrenal fatigue or some other cause of fatigue? And then how do you go about analyzing and giving them suggestions and putting protocols in place? I do want to make sure that you're aware, you probably are by now, that there's no one-size-fits-all protocol. So whereas I might say that this particular dose of this particular nutrient or herb is going to help somebody in stage three, it may not work for everybody.
Again, disclaimer, this is not medical advice. This is just a sharing of education and information from me to you.
The next thing, and we'll go into a little bit more detail about the exam, is there certain things that you can look for or have your client look for on their body to help them determine what their state of adrenal fatigue is. So, for example, you if you're not licensed to touch people, then you are not going to be able to do any of these exam things. If you're a massage therapist, for example, though, you can, you know, you can palpate their abdomen, you can do some touchy things. And some people are getting massage therapy licenses, which isn't a whole lot of work in many states, you know, maybe 100 hours, 200 hours, that they can actually have that license to touch people. Okay. Now, if you don't have that, you're not going to touch people, but you can guide people through it. You can say, take a look behind the back of your arms. Take a look here. Measure your blood pressure. There's inexpensive blood pressure cuffs that they can get, and we'll go through what some of those things are. And then, of course, there's lab. And what we find is that the symptoms and the lab don't always line up. Most of the times they do. But a lot of times people are not that well in touch with what's going on in their body and their level of exhaustion, mainly because they've been dealing with it for so long and it's status quo. So they don't really get it and they may rate the symptoms lighter. Other people are like almost hypochondriacs, and I don't want to use that word with disreverence, but it's like they feel everything and they make a big deal of everything. They fear everything that happens in their body. And so they're going to be at rank much higher. So the exam is more telling than the questionnaire, and the lab tends to be more telling than both because it's actually giving you the state of their hormones in their blood or their saliva. The next piece you really need to work with people on is identifying their stressors. And a lot of people go, well, I'm not stressed. I meditate every day. But in reality, they're actually very stressed. And they're either in denial or the stresses are not mental and emotional. They're in another aspect of their body. There could be hidden infections. A lot of times when people have had surgeries, there's micro-infections that happen along those surgery lines, and that creates a problem. Some people have infections in their gut, dysbiosis in their gut, overgrowth of candida, of clostridia, of helicobacter, of even enterobacter, which is one of the normal bacteria, or the overgrowth of bacteria that belong in the large intestine but migrate to the small intestine in this condition called SIBO. So these people might have hidden infections. They may not really know it. They may not be suffering from digestive issues but have a digestive a problem, and it's manifesting as fatigue. It's manifesting as stressed out adrenals. So it's really important to do kind of a thorough history with people and ask them questions. You know, when did this thing start? When did you start to feel fatigued? How long has it been happening? What situations make it worse? What makes it better? Ask about life events. Ask about diet changes. Ask about travel. Ask about things like exposures to mold. Did they have a leak in their house a few years ago that they fixed, but they didn't think anything of it, but maybe the sheetrock or the insulation got damaged and is growing mold in it? So it's really important to be looking at those things, and that's more an environmental thing than a hidden infection thing, but environmental things can be contributing. And of course, their diet and lifestyle, right? People who live in the fast lane and are executives and taking clients out to lunch and dinner all the time and drinking wine and eating rich food, that's a dietary stress. So all these different stressors happen on the body, and you don't necessarily know it. So you can't tell that this person, that it seems to be all chill and mellow, that they're actually that way. And when we're actually looking at reversing some of this stuff, We want to look at how do we help them get energized again, right? So you have to transform those stressors. You have to remove the stressors, like the environmental stuff. You have to change the diet. And if there's hidden infections, you do need to either send them to somebody who can, or if you're familiar with protocols for healing gut infections, you can certainly work with them. I wouldn't tell them, hey, you have a gut infection, that's diagnosing. There's a possibility based on your symptoms that there's something abnormal growing in your gut. You know, maybe you've got candida out of control or something like that. It might be worth checking into. And you certainly can run stool analysis tests to determine that. So when you're transforming their stress, you want them to have those things that they can do, like heart math, like EFT tapping, and there's a whole number of other things, and you find the one that works. Personally, I like the heart math because you can do it in tiny increments, and you can do it throughout the day. And over time, it just becomes a lifestyle. Sleep is super ultra important, and we'll go through that when we go through protocols. I have seen people retrain their adrenals by doing sleep vacations. Having fun, and this is something we all overlook a lot in our lives when we get busy, 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 and so do your clients. And when you can bring the fun back into it, make your appointments with them fun. Think about ways you can make their appointments fun and light instead of stressing them out more with the bad news that their diet sucks and their environment is moldy and all that. You can help them to have fun with all this and incorporate at least 5 minutes a day of fun in their life. And then relationships, you know, helping them if they darve. So relationships are a huge part of the mental and emotional stressors. And if they're having issues with relationships, offering them, you know, you may not be a counselor yourself, but you can certainly offer them tools and books and, you know, suggest maybe they get counseling if that's part of the cause, right? So a lot of times people have this adrenal fatigue. They do all these things for years and years, and then they get divorced, and a year later their adrenal fatigue is better because they were just living in this just horrible environment where the relationships were not good. Or relationships with kids, estranged relationships. You know, healing people's relationships is super important. And one of the things that's super important for healing just about everything, including cancer, is forgiveness. A lot of people are carrying around grudges for things that happened to them when they were little kids, and they don't even realize they have the grudge, but it's in their DNA, it's in their energy, it's affecting their epigenetics. And when you can get them into a place of letting go. So health coaching is more than just telling people what to eat or giving people supplements or giving them herbs. It's important to really work on all aspects to help them in identifying what the stresses are and giving them those resources to help them let go of it. Optimizing their diet. We're going to get into that in much more detail, but you've got to make sure that their diet is clean. I've had so many people come to me after having been to naturopaths or acupuncturists or functional medicine doctors and said, yeah, we've been working on my adrenals for 3 years and, you know, I just don't seem to be getting better. And what's happening is they're not really going into the details of optimizing the diet. And that's where I want you to stand out and shine. It's not just to say, yeah, eat a good diet. Yeah, go off gluten. Yeah. But to really give them tools and strategies and make sure they are, and make sure they know if they want to heal this, that they have to be really pristine about, like, say, gluten, which is a huge stressor. Until they've been able to get their symptoms cleared, and then they can go back after everything's fine. If they've done a test that says they don't have gluten intolerance and they don't have the genes for it, then they go back. So those kind of things are super important. And teaching them how to do elixirs. If you like my elixirs, you're welcome to use those. The timing of their meals, the nutrient-dense meals, and eliminating dietary stressors. And then the nutrients, and we'll go through that. We have amazing charts. And then there's the supplemental nutrients. And we need to be looking at this as stage 1, 2, 3 is for the herbs and the nutrients, because some herbs are going to be great if the person's in stage 1, and they're not going to be doing any good, and they may actually do harm if they're in stage 3. So you've got to really make sure that you're clear and encourage people to get this testing done. It's an inexpensive test, like, what, $140, $150? those of you who are in NEPT, you have access to directly ordering from that company. Those of you who are practitioners, like a licensed practitioner, can order it direct from BioHealth, which is the test I'm liking the best right now. But make sure that you get them, really encourage them to get tested if you want to do the best job with them. Because if you guess wrong, you know, like they really seem like they're a stage one, but they're a stage three, and you give them herbs, you can actually make them worse. So what I would recommend is, if you're not going to do the testing, that you kind of stay in the, these herbs are good for all the areas and these nutrients are good for all the stages. So I want to give you a review, and then maybe go a little deeper with the adrenal glands and what they are, where they are, their anatomy, just so you understand it. Of course, they sit above the kidneys. You know that. This is what they look like. They have an outside part. There's a capsule that surrounds it. It's almost, you know, like the shell. And then they have the cortex, which is on the outside. And then they have the medulla, which is that inside part. And the blood vessel, the blood supply, comes directly into the adrenal medulla. What I want you to remember is that the adrenals are charged with keeping people safe in the face of danger and mobilizing their resources. And it's that mobilizing resources to escape from danger, fight off predators, and survive is what does the damage when you're in excessive stress state. They also produce the hormones like adrenaline and cortisol to keep you safe. So just a review, if you're not already familiar with how hormones work, where they work is you've got the secreting cell that sends a message, and then it lands on a target cell. So that triggers the message. So for example, maybe it's cortisol's in the bloodstream and it lands on the pancreas, and it tells the pancreas that it needs to shut down the digestive enzyme production because we're in a emergency state. Or it may land on the blood vessels and it says constrict, so we can send more blood flow to the extremities. Or it lands on the brain and it says, shut down the prefrontal cortex. We don't have time for physics problems right now. Fire up the lizard brain and let's get going. And I'll show you the details of how all that works in a bit. So that's what happens. The adrenal gland is the producer. So it's the secreting cell. It's also the target cell because it gets its marching orders from the pituitary. The pituitary sends it some hormones called adrenocorticotropic stimulating hormone, I think, ACTH. Yeah. So it's a secreting hormone that says, hey, adrenals, we're in stress. And I'll show you how that happens in a bit. So it is the recipient of it's a target cell for the pituitary, and it's also the secreting cell for producing cortisol and adrenaline. So this is the picture. So this gives you a little bit more. You've got the hypothalamus, which perceives the stress, and it releases CRH, a corticotrophic releasing hormone, which tells the pituitary, hey, we've got some stress going on, fire up the system. So the pituitary then says adrenocorticotrophic hormone, and it says, wake up, adrenals, time to produce cortisol, time to mobilize resources. We got a problem here. So let's go a little bit more into the adrenal gland anatomy and function. And then I want to go back to that process that happens when there's stress. So I just wanted you to introduce you to the HPA axis, which many of you already know about, but it's always good to review. And then we're going to go through the adrenal anatomy. Then we're going to go through the stress, what actually happens during the stress that triggers this, so that you understand it. And why am I going through all this? It's like, if you're a practitioner and you're working with people, first of all, they're going to ask you questions. And second of all, you need to understand it rather than just, oh yeah, cortisol gets secreted. It's really good to understand the how, so that you can understand how you might have to intervene and help this person create balance. So they're two glands. They measure 3 to 5 grams. They're located above the kidneys. They have the highest rates of blood flow amongst all the tissues in the body. They have one of the highest per gram of tissue. So that's how important they are. Plus the highest concentration of vitamin C per gram of any tissue in the body. So they're gobbling up vitamin C when people are under stress. And then the hormone's released cyclically, and it's called the circadian rhythm. And I'll show you what that looks like. You've seen it before, and we're going to show you on actual tests of actual real people. So this is just to give you a little bit more detail. And again, you know, lock this away in your mind. You know, it's kind of nice to know this, but it's not mandatory. But I think the more depth you have, the easier it's going to be when you've got a client that's tough and you're going, what the heck is going on here? It's not quite what I expected. You've got the outer zone, which is the cortex, and that's where the production of cortisol, DHEA, and aldosterone happens. And we know cortisol is that hormone that happens when you're stressed, and it prolongs the stress response. So adrenaline gets in, gives that quick rush, and cortisol helps you to maintain and continue the process. DHEA is kind of the opposite of cortisol. We call it an anti-aging hormone because it helps to rebuild, helps to stimulate the prefrontal cortex and inhibit the lizard brain and the limbic system. And then the aldosterone, which regulates urine flow and sodium in the kidneys. So then the inner zone, which is called the medulla, produces the catecholamines. Well, what are the catecholamines? That's adrenaline, also known as epinephrine, and noradrenaline, also known as norepinephrine. Those are considered dual-purpose chemicals. They're hormones, but they're also neurotransmitters, and those are first response. Boom, right, first response, and we'll show you that on a diagram in a bit. And then the inner zone also produces androgens like testosterone and other, you know, intermediates for that. Okay, so the things that can go wrong are overproduction of cortisol because you've turned it on but not turned it off, right? The 24/7 syndrome of running away from tigers. You got the financial stress and the kids' stress and taking care of parents and, you know, you don't like your boss and you're getting stuck in traffic and there's just this constant flow. And those people that are overproducing sometimes overproduce all night long. So those are the people who can't fall asleep because the mind is racing. Oh, what do I gotta do? I gotta solve this. And when that's happening, that's where you can intervene and help them with the slowing it down, right? And you can do that with habits, but you can also do that chemically through herbs and nutrients. And then an imbalance, right? So it causes imbalances between DHEA, progesterone, estrogen, testosterone, thyroid, and even oxytocin, which is the love hormone, which, you know, feel-good hormone, which gets produced with a lot of touch and connection and intimacy. And we'll look at those in details. And then adrenal fatigue and exhaustion. You know, that's we see that all the time, and that's what we're going to be working on here. You also see a lot of immune system issues that affect the adrenals and cause that stress, like autoimmune diseases and infections. And then it's a vicious cycle because the cortisol can actually decrease the immune system. So it's one of those things like, oh, which came first, the chicken or the egg, right? And then the circadian rhythm. So the cortisol's highest in the morning, you know, 6 to 8 a.m., depending on when the person gets up and goes to bed. It's usually, you know, it should be pretty much controlled by the circadian cycle, like the sun cycle. So it might be later in the morning, in the winter, and earlier in the summer, just because you adapt to that circadian rhythm. And then it starts to drop down throughout the day so that at midnight, when you're going to go to sleep, you know, between 10 and midnight, then it's at its lowest. And what we're going to see when we look at cases is a major different kinds of disruptions to this, and all kinds of disruptions. They can have a similar pattern, but it's just lower. They can have a peak at different times. They can go up at midnight and all sorts of stuff like that. So stress, you know, we know what stress is. It's a strain. It's a force that tends to strain or deform. That's the definition of it. A physical, chemical, or emotional factor that causes bodily or mental tension and may even be a factor in disease. And this was first identified as a health problem by Hans Selye. Okay, he called it the general adaptation syndrome, and he's the first one to identify the stages of adrenal fatigue. So that's what stress is. So let's see what actually is happening in the body during stress. And this is a very complicated little diagram, but let's start all over on the left. Ideally, you know, in olden days, it was a tiger was chasing you. But it might not be. It might be just that you're stuck in traffic. It might be that you're studying for a major exam. It might be that you're overwhelmed. Your kid is not behaving properly, anything at all. So you exceed it. It's acute stress or a perceived threat. It may not be a real threat like the tiger, right? It may just be that you're worrying about something. But that gets perceived. You hear something, you see something, triggers a response in the amygdala, this part of the brain, which talks to the hypothalamus and says, "Woo, baby, we've got a problem." The hypothalamus goes down that axis I showed you before, which is to stimulate the pituitary to say, "Hey, get the adrenals involved." And that affects the adrenal cortex. The other part is that it gives a feedback loop into the autonomic nervous system, and it activates the sympathetic part of the nervous system, which affects the medulla, which causes adrenaline to be produced. So now we're over here, right? So we've gone hypothalamus, nervous system, down to the medulla, which secretes the adrenaline, and the person goes, ah, you know, you got your heart rate racing, everything's happening, okay? So that's the big piece. And then the cortex produces the cortisol, and cortisol goes out and affects all these different parts to get ready for fight flight. So it shuts down the digestion. It decreases the power of the immune system. It turns it down. It causes an upregulation in the cardiovascular, like increased blood pressure, increased heart rate, increased respiratory. And then, but also it increases the level of inflammatory cytokines. Cytokines, IL-1, IL-1 beta, IL-6, and TNF-alpha. So those are getting activated by cortisol, right? And those are inflammatory markers. And we'll see how those actually affect the thyroid when we look at the adrenal-thyroid connection. So it's really important that you help people manage this, because if they're in this stressed-out state, or you're in this stressed-out state all the time, you're messing up all the system. Then it has the effect on the thyroid, which decreases the conversion of active T3 from T4. It has an effect on the receptors, and it has an effect on the TSH. Okay. It also, if we go back to the adrenals, in addition, the cortisol affects blood sugar, because, hey, what the heck? We have to run away. We might as well increase the blood sugar. The blood sugar also has a negative feedback with the thyroid. So you can see that just this perceived stress. Now, if this was a tiger, great. But since it's not a tiger, it's just you worrying that maybe the stock market's going to crash tomorrow and you really don't have any control over it, you're still getting yourself in the same tizzy, creating the same imbalances. So your clients are going to have these problems they may not even know are related to their adrenals or to their stress. So managing stress is one of those core things that has to happen. And I'm going to give you great protocols that you can put in place. But if you don't help them to manage the stress, they're not going to get out of the situation. It's just going to keep perceiving. So chronic stress is anything that they have on a regular basis, like hidden pain, inflammation, emotional, environmental. We talked about all those at the beginning, and food. And it compromises their critical body systems, like we showed in that. So constantly having stress and constantly having cortisol spikes here and there is going to affect all those systems. Okay? So it's a big cost, right? It costs trillions of dollars a year. It's largely ignored by mainstream medicine. So here's where you can shine. It's a common culprit behind almost all symptoms and conditions. And medicine just says, oh, take some Prozac. That ain't gonna help. So we have to be really clear that part of our brilliance in working with people is not just to know what vitamin to tell them to take, and not just to know what foods to tell them to eat and avoid, but to help them to manage all the different pieces in their life, because it's all connected. Here's some things you just want to know. These are things like when people talk about, well, their stress and say they also have thyroid problems, you're going to say, did you know that all this extra stress that you're having is damaging the receptors for thyroid on your cells? And that's what's making you fat. Or one of the reasons you're getting fat. You might not be eating too much, but you're under so much stress that you've got damage to those receptors and thyroid resistance. It also, insufficient cortisol lowers thyroid receptor sensitivity. So you might be thinking, well, okay, so my person is not in the stage of alarm, they're in the stage of fatigue. But actually you need just the Goldilocks principle of cortisol to keep those thyroid receptors working right. So whether they're in stage 1, 2, or 3, they're still damaging their receptors. And so they're bound to be having some sort of thyroid symptoms, and if not overt thyroid presentation on labs. It also decreases the conversion from T4 to T3. There's an enzyme called 5' deiodinase, and it impairs that. Okay, so T4 is the inactive form, has very little activity, and it has to be converted to T3 in order for a person to get their metabolism working. So again, that's how excess cortisol can make a person fat, can make them depressed, can make them have digestive problems, etc. So it can be at the heart of so much of what's going on for people. And, you know, if you test somebody and it's not, then it's not the cause. There's something else. There may be something else. But if you test them and they're clean, you've got to be digging deeper. So it also increases the blood sugar and insulin. And increased insulin can decrease thyroid function. So you see how stress is a major inhibitor of thyroid function. When you have extra cortisol and corticotropin-releasing hormone, it actually inhibits TSH, and that's through the hypothalamus reaction. It impairs a thyroxine-binding globulin, and that thyroxine-binding globulin is what carries the thyroid hormone around the system. And if that's impaired, they can have low free number or high or low free numbers. We talked about impact on the immune system and then those cytokines, which I already talked about. That's inflammation. And so if somebody has a lot of stress, it's going to aggravate an autoimmune disease. It's going to aggravate any kind of inflammatory condition that they have in their body. So the dangers, it affects everything. So let's just talk briefly about how it affects sex drive, called the pregnenolone steal. So this is what's really going on. You've got cholesterol, which needs pantothenic acid to get converted to pregnenolone. So if you're working with somebody with adrenal fatigue and you're not doing the B5, I stress it a lot, B5 is important because it helps them, especially if they have high cholesterol and low sex hormones. It's like, wait, they have plenty of precursor, what's happening? Pantothenic acid is one of the things, plus all the other nutrition that we talk about. It's converted to pregnenolone, which is the precursor down to cortisol. So pregnenolone down to cortisol, we don't have to look at all those intermediates. But it also goes to what? Progesterone, DHEA, testosterone, and all the estrogens. So if the body is perceiving tigers all the time, cortisol steals the pregnenolone, and there's not enough left over here, which is why I want to emphasize when you have people showing up in your office with hot flashes and menopause symptoms and PMS and other symptoms of reproductive hormone imbalance, if you just go for what are the natural treatments for that, then you're missing the boat because you've got to look at the adrenals. Those organs, the ovaries and testes, generally do not malfunction because on their own, just like out of the blue. Oftentimes, most of the time, it's related to years of chronic stress. Anger, right? Your emotions affect the immune system. So this is how stress affects the immune system. It actually decreases levels of IgA, secretory IgA, for up to 8 hours, maybe even longer, afterwards, after the stress event. So if we start at baseline here, this is your secretory IgA levels. With the, if you go into like doing heart math and going into appreciation or some other method, it actually goes up, comes down to baseline, but then it trickles up for hours afterwards. So you're not having a negative impact, you're actually having a slightly positive impact. But when somebody's angry or frustrated, going into a rage, you can have decreased secretory IgA for up to 8 hours. And secretory IgA protects mucous membranes. So that means they're much more susceptible to catching a cold, catching a stomach issue, growth of bad bacteria, loss of integrity of the lining of the gut. So this is really important to really emphasize with your patients and clients that this is what's happening during stress, and that's why we really need to get to the bottom of this and work with your adrenals. How stress affects heart rhythm. This is what what frustration looks like. It's all ragged and all, and this is what appreciation looks like. And HeartMath studies have shown that when you're in this state of coherence, this bottom one, then you've got all this cooperation between the body parts, between the brain and the heart and the immune system. And they measure enzymes and digestive function and blood pressure. And it all improves when we're in this heart rate state and gets worse in this one. Right? So I show these to people. You know, if you're sitting one-to-one with a person in person, you can have a chart like this and say, look, you know, this is what's happening every time you get frustrated, and these are the implications of it. And here's what we want to do to help you resolve it. Because a big part of working with clients is not just having the right things for them to do. It's getting the buy-in and the cooperation. And the more little tools you use and charts you show, the better it's going to be. And this is a tool that you can use with your clients so, so effectively. It's an amazing tool. And so you basically have them like monitor themselves. Like, what emotions are you feeling on a regular basis? Like, monitor it throughout the day. They can even carry this chart. And I'd recommend you carry this chart yourself. So what you're seeing is that cortisol gets produced over on the, when there's negative emotions, and DHEA when there's positive emotions, adrenaline when there's high energy, and acetylcholine when there's low energy. And there's no right or wrong here. I mean, all these hormones have the right, they have function, and we need them. We can't take them away, but they have to be in balance and synchronicity. We can't always be in high energy, like, wow, I'm blissed, I'm excited, I'm on the roller coaster ride. Even if it's positive, high energy positive emotions are draining on the system because of the level of adrenaline. Low energy negative emotions are probably the worst of all. That's like powerlessness and depression and just lack of motivation. So what you do with this chart is you ask your clients to make a list of all of their high energy emotions. And you can do it together. Like, what high energy negative emotions do you go into? You know, and you can list them, like anger and frustration and rage. What are some high energy positive emotions? Excitement, exhilaration. Probably those are the best ones. And love, you know, sometimes can be, or orgasm, that kind of, whatever happens with orgasm, that sense of, ah. And low energy positive emotions would be that state you're in after meditating, that peaceful, tranquil, relaxed. And some of the low energy negative emotions, frustration, anger, rage, irritation. And you just have them gauge it. And you see where they live, and you ask them to pay attention, and then start to shift it. And start to use their heart math techniques. Even if they only do some breathing, it can usually take them out of the high energy into the medium zone. You could just feel it in your body. And then when you can add the appreciation and the visualizations, you can go into positive. So this is a tool that I find so amazing to share with people. And they go, oh my God, no wonder I'm stressed out. I live over here half the day. I'm in frustration with my boss and anger at the traffic and et cetera. So I love the emotional landscape. And I love sharing it with them and showing them what effects it has. So heart math, right? That's my favorite technique, breathing and appreciation. It goes a long way to shifting all of this into the coherent state. And this is when your adrenals are happy and the rest of your body is happy. And so allowing people to see this, not glossing over this and say, yeah, we need to do de-stress and then let's move on. It's like really spending time. If you're doing like 12-week programs with people or 6-month programs with people, it's like you map it out and you spend a whole session going through what are their stressors, the emotional landscape, teaching them how to get into the coherent state, monitoring it. You might even want to purchase if you do see people in person, you might want to purchase a heart math device, either an M-Wave or a Inner Balance, and you can attach it to your iPhone. And then when they come in, you can say, well, let's just see where you're at, right? And then once you see where they're at, let's say, okay, let's take you through this process and look at how it shifted it. So that can be a part of your practice if you're working with adrenal fatigue. So we've talked about what the adrenals are, how they work, what they look like, and the effects of stress. And I just want to just summarize it on a chart that we've got the inducers of the cortisol release. You've got cortisol, you've got ACTH that produces the cortisol. You've got things that feed into that ACTH, right? Remember I showed you that picture. There's not just mental emotional stress. Glycemic dysregulation is going to create ACTH, which is the pituitary hormone that stimulates the adrenals. Sympathetic overflow, like that sympathetic dominance or the running away from a tiger or over emphasis on anger and all that. Staying in a sympathetic state. Tissue damage, pain and that causes inflammation and pain, you know, an injury, an old injury. Sometimes people are harboring old injuries and they're just this chronic low level of pain, and that can be triggering it. And then mental and emotional stressors. And if they've got these things going on, these inflammations, these tissue damages, these mental and emotional things, they've got that all feeding into the cortisol system, it's going to burn it out. So even if they're not really, I can deal with this pain, it may be something that's triggering that constant production of cortisol and then can lead to burnout of the adrenals. And this, again, this is the dangers. I'm just reiterating it. Stress can affect every system in the body. We've gone through it now. It's a summary chart. We've got to break the vicious cycle, you see. So when somebody's under stress, it triggers their adrenals to pop in, which triggers their blood sugar, which creates more stress, which affects their thyroid, and then the adrenals affect and turn off the digestion, which can cause critters to grow, which feeds back to more stress on the adrenals. And we have to break the vicious cycle. And that's where you come in coaching people, is breaking the vicious cycle. And the breaking the vicious cycle requires a lot of things. The managing stress is critical, right? If you don't take care of the mental emotional stress and you don't look for what are those other factors, it's just going to keep precipitating. And repairing and recharging the adrenals is super important. Getting their blood sugar in balance, getting their digestion, and then if the thyroid's been impacted by all this, which it often is, going through that. So these are some of the cycles that you do. So we're going to get into a little bit about how the adrenals affect the thyroid. And I want to start with something. We talked about the HPA axis, the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal. I showed you that chart. But the thyroid's also involved. So the HPA-T axis is how all that affects the thyroid. And it's really a modern epidemic. And then you can add the G, HPATG, which is gonads, right? So all of this is affected. And this is why we're here, is to help you help people to change this. So these are some of the details. We've talked about most of this, many of this. I just wanted you to have this. You don't need to memorize this. It's just so you know that these are the ways that the adrenals impact. We already talked about the inflammation, the IL-6 beta, the IL-6 and the TNF-alpha. We've talked about that, how those inflammatory things will downregulate the HPA axis, make it go slower, and then reduce TSH. So that can cause somebody to not produce as much. We said that the inflammatory cytokines, TNF-alpha, is one of them that get produced when you're under stress. And a single injection of that reduced serum TSH, T3, free T4, free T3, and hypothalamic thyroid releasing hormone for 5 days. So think about it. If somebody's under stress all the time, they are constantly causing a downregulation of their thyroid function. So no wonder it's an epidemic now. And so many functional practitioners jump in to fix the thyroid on people right away. And it's okay to do symptomatic relief and help that, but you can't do it and not look at the adrenals, because it's just like the fire just keeps going and going. I've given you a reference, so if you want to actually see the articles, you can take a look at those. And we talked about how it decreases the conversion of T4 to T3, and then it also reduces the sensitivity of the thyroid to the TSH. So the thyroid, you know, the pituitary is putting out all this TSH, which is thyroid stimulating hormone, and the thyroid's not doing squat. It's not increasing the production because it's been down-regulated from the TNF-alpha, which is stress. So you can see it's like it is a vicious cycle, and it's all entwined, and I want to share with you how to help people pull out of it. So this is more impact on the thyroid. I talked about the suppressing. As IL-6 rises, it's been shown that T3 falls. Rapid reduction of T3 weakens the immune barriers as a result. They suppress thyroid receptor sensitivity. We mentioned that earlier. And then prolonged elevations decrease the liver clearance of the excess estrogens. So you know that you produce estrogen, and then it goes through the liver, and it goes through the conjugation pathways, and then it gets excreted. And if the elevations of cortisol are actually decreasing the clearance of those used up estrogens, they're going to recycle. And actually, extra estrogen increases thyroid binding globulin, which means that the thyroid stays stuck to this protein. and it doesn't get released from the protein, so it can't be active. And that's when you see low levels of the free thyroid hormones. And again, when we do our thyroid module, we'll go into a lot more detail on that. Okay, so how do we do it? We talked about it earlier, but symptoms are super important, but they're not the only thing because it's subjective and people aren't that, you know, they're not connected sometimes. They're disconnected. They don't know how bad it is or they don't know how good it is. They don't know how to compare. And then the physical signs, I'll go through some of those. But then there's other ways that you can look at it. You know, your standard routine lab has some markers that could suggest it, your sodium and potassium in the ratios, and I'll show you a chart on that. So routine lab will say, maybe there is some adrenal stuff going on. You can do a direct blood testing of adrenal hormones. Like DHEA is more accurate. Cortisol is not, because it's usually you just do it one time. You're not going to go into the lab four times during the day to see if your rhythm is right. So the cortisol usually doesn't give you a good assessment of what's really going on with the person. Saliva testing tends to be 4 to 6 times a day, and it gives you the rhythm, and it tends to give you the most accurate as far as everything I've read and experienced. And then it can be done as part of a 24-hour urine comprehensive steroid panel that either Genova Diagnostics or Meridian Valley does, and it actually gives you all the intermediates. There's a new test that came out that's called the Dutch test. And that basically combines testing the sex hormones with testing the rhythm, the cortisol rhythm. So it's basically a urine test, but it's a little spot check, and you have these little strips that have the person pee on, and then there's 4 of them throughout the day, the same way you do a saliva test, and you get to see what the rhythm is. So scorecards, you have that access. I told you can take my scorecard questions. You can take them and put them in your own Word doc. Add them, rearrange them, do whatever you want with them. And asking questions. So the scorecard is one thing. It'll give you a score, but asking questions is another. I ask them specific questions. You know, how long have you been fatigued? What were the circumstances before? You want to ask them, when was the last time you felt well and energetic? And some people say, I think when I was 5 years old. So it's a clue. And then you ask them, did they just replace their carpeting, their paints? And there's a whole slew of questions that you ask to get environmental stresses, mental and emotional stressors, sleep stressors, etc. And then if you have a score before you start to rebuild them, you know what their baseline is. And then you can repeat the test afterwards. So when I have people fill out like the adrenal assessment scorecard, I'll have them do it again 3 months later after they've been on a protocol. Or I'll actually, sometimes if they're willing, I'll have them do it once a month just to see what the progress is. So we're going to go into more detail on the labs. I just want to go through the symptoms first. When somebody has overactive adrenals, usually they can't fall asleep. They've got lots of stress going on. They gain weight. They wake up tired after six or more hours of sleep. So they wake up after 8 hours, they're still tired. No matter what, they feel tired. They perspire a lot, or they perspire with little or no activity. Do you ever have people like that? They say, I just have to think about exercise and I perspire. You might be thinking that they're in an overactive adrenal state. And they're oftentimes tired and wired. So they're tired when they first get up in the morning, but then by the afternoon and the evening, they're just wired. They're just totally wired, because they get this burst. And it's oftentimes because their rhythm is out of order. And then lower adrenals, you know, the obvious stuff like low energy, but also somebody who says they get ill a lot and they can't recover well from exercise. So I love to go to the gym, but when I go to the gym, I'm in bed for 2 or 3 days after because I'm just so wiped out. That's a pure fire sign. A lot of people get those dark circles under the eyes and then paleness around the mouth. They get lots of sprains and strains because ligament and tendon laxity is one of the key hallmark symptoms. They get intolerant to cold, and that may be, thyroid people get intolerant to cold. How do I tell the difference? I've given you a chart. I've given you both a chart here in the slide presentation, and I've got a document, and you can differentiate. But they crave salt, and their body needs salt. When people crave it, don't arbitrarily put people on low sodium diets. Even if they have high blood pressure, you want to work with that because you've got to just see if it affects it and really pay attention. Wow, they've been off of salt for this length of time and they're feeling worse. So really monitor that, because when they have excess adrenal activity and then adrenal fatigue, their body has created an imbalance of aldosterone, which is another hormone that gets produced by the adrenals. And that affects the kidneys' retention of fluid and electrolytes and allows them to pee it all out. So honor that. When they get low blood pressure when they stand up, that's a really clear sign of adrenal fatigue. Their hair starts to get thin, dull, falls out, sparse hair on the forearms and lower legs. You see that, I see that, especially if you see that in men. Women tend to like that when they have sparse hair on their legs, but men don't. And if they have that, it's usually a sign of low adrenals. And light sensitivity. You know, I can always tell when I've been overworking and I will go outside in the sunlight and I am just squinting like crazy. And that happens to me periodically, happens to my son periodically. We call it photophobia. My 21-year-old will periodically say, oh, I have photophobia again. I will say, oh, you're studying too hard. And dry skin. So these are some of the symptoms. So the tired and wired stage is stage one. But it's where that the body is low in DHEA, which means that growth and repair is going to be compromised. It's draining the reserves, has all those negative effects of cortisol we talked about. And oftentimes people in a stage one will either be very tired in the morning or they're good in the morning, they're good all day, they have a slump in the mid-afternoon, and then they're wired at bedtime and they can't go to sleep. Like, I'm up at 2 or 3 in the morning and they can't go to sleep. What you're looking at when you're looking at which stage they're in is the DHEA will be low and the cortisol will be high. And what I mean by high is the total cortisol, right? The total cortisol. And you add up the four segments. And in the stage two, the DHEA is low because it's been going on for a while, but the cortisol is normal. So sometimes people say, oh, you're normal because your cortisol looks normal, but it's not. It's either a normal rhythm with low DHEA or it's an abnormal rhythm, like it's high in certain places and low in other places. You're starting to eat away the reserves and the immune system is compromised. And finally, stage three, I can't get your head out of the cereal bowl. You've got the low DHEA, the low cortisol. You'll probably see low sex hormones, and you might even see low sex hormones earlier in stage two, and that would be a hallmark sign. If they look fairly normal on their cortisol rhythm, but you look at their sex hormones and they're low. Personally, I generally don't check the sex hormones right from the start. Because I figure, you know, I'm not going to address them directly, and I probably are low. Now, if somebody has unlimited funds and they don't mind spending the money, sure, it's great to do that. But in general, when people are like, you know, making sure that they don't spend too much on these tests, I will do an adrenal stress profile at the beginning stages. And then in a few months, I'll look to see if they're still having issues and we're still working on it. I might look to see, well, how are the sex hormones doing now? Now we may have to go in there and actually help them. So stage three, there are also a lot of the negative effects. So they may have digestive problems and depression and brain fog and all that. Low libido for sure. We saw how the libido affects it. Sex hormone imbalances. Signs of accelerated aging, you know, the more wrinkles and skin sagging and belly fat and things like that. And poor memory, because cortisol affects part of the brain called the hippocampus, which is the seat of memory. And that's super, super important to know, because when people are getting stressed out, of course they're not going to remember. And the worst thing is, like, we get stressed out when we have a major project or a major test and we need to be clear thinking. That's the worst time to get stressed out, because it shuts off your prefrontal cortex and it impacts your memory. So it's really important to teach people those tools of, before an important event, before a major thing, be doing your heart math to shift yourself into parasympathetic mode so you can actually think and remember. So there's a progression of stages of adrenal fatigue, right? It starts out, they're normal. And, you know, kind of we're born that way, but not all kids are born that way. Because a lot of kids are born into a very stressful environment. You know, mom's pregnant and she didn't want to be, or they're happy about being pregnant, but they're worried about their finances. Maybe she has a really rough pregnancy, and all those stress hormones from mom get triggered, and they trigger the adrenals in the babe. So a lot of kids are coming out of the uterus in alarm state. A lot of them are. Okay, and that creates a lot of problems with attention deficit disorder and other behavioral type things in children. Okay, so they start out normal, and then we go into a stage that's called alarm before, well, we go into, yeah, we go into alarm, and I didn't put it on here. There's a stage where before things start to get impaired. Stage one, things are starting to get impaired. So there's actually, there's an alarm stage before this where your body's adapting. It's adapted to stress. It's what Hans Selye says. It's adapted. It's adapted. Adaptation, I think he calls it. So you've got all the stress going on, and the cortisol levels are high, but you haven't had any of the damage yet, right? And as long as you can catch somebody when they're in that state, like say, you know, somebody dies, you move, there's times when we're going to go there. But if they can shift themselves back, they don't progress to stage one, then stage two, then stage three. Okay? It's when you stay in alarm state too long that all the negative effects of cortisol happen. You get into stage one, and then from stage one, the levels start to come down, and you think you're normal. And when you're in stage two, you usually came through stage one, and then you go into stage three, okay, whereas everything's shut down. So let's look at some of the exam signs that you can do with people. If you are not licensed to be able to do a blood pressure with somebody, you can actually have, if you do have an office, you can actually have a blood pressure cuff. You buy them at Walgreens and Walmart and things like that, and you can have them actually stick their hand. You can give it to them and say, here, stick your hand in here and do it. So you're not actually doing it. That's not practicing medicine without a license. That's teaching people the tools that help them to stay healthy. There's a very specific way to take the blood pressure. Is basically where you take their blood pressure seated like normal. I like to take it in both arms and compare. And then once you do that, you get a sense of where their baseline, say it's 120 over 80, which is kind of the normal blood pressure. And then you have them lie down, you let them rest there for a minute or two, and then you take the blood pressure again. What you should see is that the blood pressure goes down a little bit. So then you take it, you have them put the cuff on, inflate it, and then have them stand up, and then take the blood pressure immediately on standing. Now, in a good, healthy system, the adrenals should kick in, the sympathetics should kick in, and boom, the pressure goes up by 10 points from laying down to seated. It may be the same as what they started with, but it'll go up from laying down to seated, I mean to standing. And then you can take it, if it doesn't, if it goes down or it stays the same, you can take it every minute and for about 5 minutes. If by 5 minutes it's not 10 points above what it was laying down, they're pretty severe. It's a good indication that they might be, let's just say, pretty severe in their adrenals. And if not, if it just eventually goes up, you can say, okay, so it took 4 minutes before we got up to that stage. You can use that as a test. Like in between doing another adrenal stress index, you can go and do that again in 2 to 3 weeks or 4 weeks just to see if your protocols are having an effect. And I've definitely seen that have an effect. The other thing that you can do, and you don't have to touch them to do this, is you can have them hold the pen light. You can guide them to do it themselves, and you could be watching. So that there you go. You're not touching them. You're not actually shining a light in their eyes. So you look at, you shine a light in their eyes. And it should be in a relatively dark room, so shut the lights out. And you shine the light into their eyes, and you watch their pupils. Now, their pupils should, they should constrict when you put the bright light in. Now, in the low light conditions, they should be dilated. You don't want to be completely dark, but you know, something that's not like bright sunny or bright fluorescent lights. If they can't stay constricted for 20 seconds, with those bright lights staying in their eye, then there's usually a problem of adrenal stuff, and it's a problem with the sympathetic nervous system in any case, right? So that's an easy test that you can do in your office, and you can ask people to do at home with a partner, like, okay, we're going to shine a light in my eyes, tell me what happens, and then they measure. There's spots on the tip of the rib. You can have them grab their, put their hand right at the lower part of their ribs, and with their hand in the front and their thumb going towards the back, and right where that last rib ends at the side, if they have like a lot of tenderness, it's a reflex sign that they might have adrenal fatigue or adrenal hyperactivity. Sometimes black or brown discoloration below the eyelids. You know, there's a lot of things that you can do in facial diagnosis to look, but black or brown below the eyes is oftentimes, and puffiness sometimes is either kidney or adrenal. Dark gray or red at the back of the tongue. So tongue diagnosis is big in Chinese medicine. You can have them stick out their tongue and you can look. There's no laws against having somebody stick their tongue at you and you looking at their tongue. Ulcerations or canker sores, either on the sides of the mouth or inside the mouth. Bad breath. I mean, bad breath could be anything. It could be poor hygiene. It could be a gum infection. It could be a gut infection. But sometimes that, you know, that in conjunction with a lot of the other symptoms is just like icing on the cake. Rough, flaky cuticles. You know, they get red easily. They flake away. And then there's tongue signs in Chinese medicine. So if you wanted to look up tongue signs for adrenal problems, you might find some places. Now, you don't have to do all of these. It's just I'm giving you tools to help you to be able to assess your clients, to be able to understand where they're at with their adrenals. Now, here's the markers. Remember I said earlier, there's some routine blood screens for adrenal analysis. So if we have low adrenals being signified by high potassium, low sodium, and low glucose. Not necessarily all of them. The glucose doesn't have to be low, but if you see that pair, it's oftentimes a sign that their adrenals are low and have been for a while. On the other hand, if you see a low potassium and high sodium, that's going to be a sign of hyperadrenal, and especially if it's combined with high glucose and triglycerides. And the glucose, because if they've been hyper in that state for a long time, they've been having that cortisol creating the extra blood sugar over and over again, day after day. We've got adrenal saliva testing, and let's compare it to urine and blood. The saliva testing is great because they can do it at home. They get a kit, they send it back to the lab. It's non-invasive. In terms of the precision, we're going to get kind of the cycling, and we don't do it every hour. And if somebody had unlimited funds, you'd have them order three or four kits and just have them measure their cortisol every hour. That would be kind of fun to do. It would also be kind of fun to have them do that and meditate and then check it and then do some stuff where they get really aggravated or exercise and test it and to see. Saliva measures the free form, the biologically active form, whereas the blood measures the protein-bound form of the hormones. And then samples can be stable for several weeks as long as they keep them. You know, with blood, you've got to run it right away or it coagulates and various things happen to it. But with this, these samples can be kept very well. So we talked earlier about differentiation, because a lot of the symptoms people are going to present with may look like thyroid problem and you're not going to know. Just suffice it to say, on the one hand, they're mostly going to happen together. So they're mostly going to have signs of both. I've given you the abbreviated version of this chart, and I've got the longer version that you'll get in your resource materials. And it's like a 3 or 4 page that goes through much more detail on these symptoms. But in terms of major symptoms, body temperature. With hypothyroid, it's usually pretty low, but it's consistently low. It just doesn't go up. With hypoadrenal, oftentimes it's low, but it'll fluctuate. It may raise up in the late afternoon or may have some rhythm and probably related to when the cortisols are higher. The energy pattern in hypo is generally sluggish, whereas in adrenal, I mean in thyroid, in adrenal, it could be tired and wired, but it can also be completely wiped, as in stage three. Although some stage threes still get some of those wired feelings. With the body type, your hypothyroid people will have difficulty losing weight, and the hypoadrenal will have difficulty gaining muscle. And they may have trouble with the excess fat as well, but it's kind of a little vague, subtle differentiation. The blood pressure in hypothyroid can be normal or high. In hypoadrenal, it's oftentimes low to normal. Their total cholesterol in hypothyroid is high, so that could be a really differentiating factor, whereas it can be low in adrenal. Their facial color, I mean, this maybe or maybe not, you know, there's so many things that affect facial color. It can be the sun exposure, whether they've just exercised, you know, their nationality. But in general, hypothyroid is considered to be a little bit more reddish and hypoadrenal a little bit more pale. With sweating, remember we talked about how the adrenal people are going to be profusely sweating, whereas in thyroid people, it's more scanty or non-existent. And then in thyroid, the bowels will tend to be sluggish. Somebody is constipated, it's oftentimes the thyroid, and they're trying fiber and they're trying all this stuff, but a lot of times it's the thyroid. Whereas in hypoadrenal, it can be irritable or hyperfunctioning. You get diarrhea in the hypo. In the hyperthyroid, you're going to tend more towards constipation or irritable bowel alternating. We've got some home testing things that you can do. This is a test kit you can order through Apex Energetics. Apex Energetics. And it's the Konigsberg Adrenal Fatigue Testing. And it's basically a bottle of this silver nitrate and potassium chlorate. And you're basically getting some urine and you follow the instructions. You put some silver, you put a drop of the potassium, and then you keep adding the silver nitrate until the thing changes to a brick red and stays that way. And that will give you an indication of how much of the chlorides are being excreted in the urine, which could be an effect, it could be indirectly related to the adrenals because of the effect on aldosterone. There's something called the Oxidata test, which is a, it's also at Apex Energetics. It's a little vial, and you have somebody, again, put a few drops of urine in it. It tells you how much oxidative stress is there. When there's a lot of adrenal activity, people who have adrenal problems tend to have a lot of oxidative stress because there's a lot of free radicals that get produced when all the adrenal hormones get done. Vitamin C, that's something they can do, see how badly they need vitamin C, because people with adrenal problems need a lot more vitamin C. You can do a zinc taste test using the little test vials. And then pH, because stress will create the pH to go way down, much more acidic. So these are things that you can teach people to do at home, or you could actually do with them in the office, right? You can actually have them do. I do a lot of these taste testing in the office when I was seeing patients in the office. So somebody presents to your office and they say, I'm exhausted. Okay, so you're going to go through a process of questions, right? You may give them some questionnaires. You may already have your own questionnaires. You're welcome to take the adrenal questionnaire. You're going to ask them a lot of questions, like I said, like what are the symptoms? What are the other symptoms? You're going to ask all about the other presenting symptoms. You're also going to ask them about the circumstances, when, what their life is like, what their stresses are like. So you start out with that history. If you can do, if you're seeing them face to face, take a look at their body through some of the exam things. Ask them to do it at home. You know, give them homework after each session. Hey, go home and, you know, get a blood pressure cuff, and or go to the Walgreens and take your blood pressure and let's see what's